This will be our last week in the Psalms. I'm fairly certain that at some point we'll wrap back around and we'll hit them again. I mean, there's a ton of those if you've looked, so I'm sure that we'll go back to them again. I hope that they've been helpful to you as we've just seen really a full gamut of human emotions tackled through the Psalms. So we're going to wrap that up for this time at least, and we'll come back at another time, which means next week we're going to start the book of 1 John, and it's a book that I've been looking forward to really us learning together for a couple months. So at the beginning message of our repentance series, which was before Psalms, I knew we were going to go here. But I also knew that we were going to wait till after the summer to get there. So this is going to be a book that's going to teach us a lot about what it looks like to mature in Christ, to grow in Him. Paul talks a lot about baby Christians and mature Christians. So this 1 John will help us see a whole lot of what it looks like to be on the path towards maturity. So with that, I'm excited for us to be able to learn. But here's my thing. I would really ask you to start reading that book ahead. So 1 John's 5 chapters, right? And that's not super long. Like, this isn't as long as Psalms. So here's what I'd ask. Maybe this week, would you open up your Bible and just read the first chapter? You don't have to read all 5, but would you read just the first chapter of it and just start having it kind of being processed through your mind so that when I preach it, it isn't really the first time that those scriptures are kind of going through your ears. And my hope for that is really how much more could we gain from exegetical preaching if really our hearts were being stirred by a text long before I ever get here to talk to you about it, right? I think it would be a good investment of our time to look at it and say, God, hey, will you already start working in my heart through this text in a short amount of time, invest a little bit, read a little bit so that you're prepared and ready for when we come here to learn and something that you've already kind of been thinking about. And I would love for us at our missional community to have several of you go, hey, you preach the text this way, and I had been reading it, and this is kind of what God has been doing in my heart, to share other relevant things. So maybe you'll even have a different angle than how I've preached it, but maybe you could share that with your community, and that would be helpful to us. So that's my hope. I want you to start doing some digging, and I love preaching to you, but I want you to preach to your own heart before the text ever comes so that we can grow more through it. And maybe that would even press our dialogue along a little bit more in missional community. So I'm asking that, please, would you just take a little bit of time? It won't take very long at all to just hammer home the first chapter of 1 John 4 next week. So that's where we're going for this week. Again, we'll be in the Psalms. So we've covered 4 Psalms so far. This will be our 5th. And if you want to remember where we've gone, the first Psalm was about fighting to be rooted in God. It was this understanding that it is difficult for us to kind of maintain this foundation in our lives of strength through God. And the Psalm talked to us about the idea of being rooted like a tree next to the waters by digging into the Word and letting God continue to be our foundation. So it was this fight to be rooted. And then Psalm 51 was about repenting when we've fallen off of what we kind of jokingly called the sin wagon. Like when you just kind of went off the rails a little bit. And we all do that every once in a while. There's times where just some of our actions just kind of get out of control and our hearts get out of control when we've realized, man, I have sinned. So Psalms told us, how do I repent to a holy God when I've just kind of gone astray a little bit? And I feel like that was helpful for us as well. Psalm 103 was fighting for our affections when we feel far off from God. We're manic in the way we feel towards God. We forget the best news ever, which is the gospel. So there's times that we walk in, maybe it's this week for you guys, where we walk in and we just feel far from God, distant from Him, our affections are off, and we're just like, I don't know what to do about that. So that Psalm taught us how to fight well when our affections are off with God. And then last week we tackled Psalm 143, which is how to argue with God when we want things to change. How do you vocalize to God disappointment or your desire for something else to happen or really what you want? How do you argue or maybe petition or ask Him to kind of change things at different time with a reverent heart and letting Him also have access to your heart in the process? Essentially, all of these Psalms were ones that kind of covered human struggle. Right? Did you see the words of it? There's fighting and toiling and repenting, which is turning from who you are and what you have been doing. All those words and arguing are filled with a sense of maybe negative connotations or negative emotions or not such fun stuff. So this week, we want to maybe switch it up. We want to not leave a sense that all of the Psalms are about the beaten down and downtrodden believer. Some of them are happy, right? Some of them are good. Some of them are out good things. Those Psalms are helpful for us when we're having a hard time, but there are Psalms that are about other things as well. So what we want to look at is a Psalm that talks about hearts that are abounding in worship to God. Hearts that are abounding in worship to the God of the universe. That's going to be really specific for where we're going. It's going to be a little bit less about maybe our negative emotions. Throughout this series, I've reiterated the Psalms are songs or poems, but they're songs or poems with intent. I mean, that's probably the fourth time I've said that, so hopefully you remember that. The intent of what they're supposed to teach us is really about our own lives, about humanity, and about God. So songs are poems that teach us about God, humanity, and our lives. Now, this psalm is going to be one that focuses more on the believer's life than maybe the believer's emotions. It's going to talk about really how does God's greatness affect how we live and maybe what our purpose is in our life. Right? How does who God is change what our purpose is and what we shoot for? And I would state this, purpose is something that's relevant to all of us, right? We all wonder about purpose. At some point or another, we struggle with it, we wrestle with it, we all wonder, okay, what's my purpose in life? So we have several students, most of them aren't here today, that are getting ready to, or they're in school, they're starting the grind again, they're 1 week in, they're probably already ready for Christmas break, but what are they doing? They're pursuing studies to pursue a job. Right, that's about a purpose. Or maybe they're pursuing studies to get them a piece of paper that lets them pursue the job that they think that they want to do. But either way, it's about purpose or destination or trajectory. Or it's where they're headed in life. It's about purpose that they're doing that. And then there's others of us who are past the school age, right? Or we're just done with school. So maybe you're done with school and you're working a job and you feel like, man, I'm fulfilling my purpose. I'm doing well. Like I understand what I'm supposed to be doing and I'm walking that out. That's good for you. Most of us probably aren't there. Most of us are done with school. We're working a job going, what in the world am I supposed to do with my life? Like, what is my purpose? What am I built for? This job, that boss definitely isn't it. So we're just struggling with purpose. So for all of us, this idea of purpose is really relevant. Now, I think that most of us think about our purpose professionally or vocationally quite a bit. Whether we hit it or not, we think about it a lot. What am I supposed to be doing? What was I built for? What should I be making money doing? How am I going to be happy? We think about that a lot, but what the problem is we don't wrestle with or think about very much, what am I built for spiritually? Right? We think a lot, what am I built for? What's my purpose vocationally? But what is my purpose? What am I built for? How am I supposed to live spiritually? Is something that really either escapes us or we struggle to find an answer to it. What am I for now that I am a believer? So this psalm will speak into exactly that. What is part of a believer's purpose? Not from the perspective of where should I live or who should I work for or who should I marry or what church should I go to. Not from that perspective, but more from this. Really, now that I am a believer, what should I live for? That's different. Vocationally is what should I do? This is going to tackle what should I live for now because of what Christ has done. What should I be mindful of? What should I pursue because of God, what he's done in me, how he's changed me? How does that change my purpose and how should I live in light of that? So that's the angle we're going to tackle this in. So if you want to look at Psalms 96, we're going to start reading there. Normally, we read a little bit, talk a little bit, read a little bit, talk a little bit. What we're going to do this week is we're going to read the whole psalm just so we can get a feel of the whole thing, and then we'll go back and we'll read some of the parts. So I think that may be helpful to us. Psalm 96, 1 through 13. We'll start looking there. Keep your eye out for purpose. Keep your eye out for worship. It says this, "Oh, sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord all the earth. Sing to the Lord, bless his name, tell of his salvation from day to day. Declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous works among all the peoples. For great is the Lord and greatly to be praised. He is to be feared above all gods. 5. For all the gods of the peoples are worthless idols, but the Lord made the heavens. Splendor and majesty are before him. Strength and beauty are in his sanctuary. 7. Ascribe to the Lord, O families of the peoples. Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due to his name. Bring an offering and come into his courts. Worship the Lord in the splendor of holiness. Tremble before him all the earth. 10. Say among the nations, the Lord reigns. Yes, the world is established. It shall never be moved. He will judge the people with equity. Let the heavens be glad and let the earth rejoice. Let the sea roar and all that fills it. Let the field exult and everything in it. Then shall all the trees of the forest sing for joy before the Lord, for he comes to judge the earth. He will judge the world in righteousness and the people in his faithfulness. That's Psalm 96. So we already let the cat out of the bag a little bit. We're going to be talking about worship and purpose. You and I were made for worship. It doesn't matter if you're a believer or not. You're like, I don't know if I'm kind of drinking the Kool-Aid of what you guys do. It doesn't matter. We're all built for worship. It doesn't matter who you are, but we're built to worship something specific, the God of the universe. That's going to be the point in this Psalms. Psalms emphatically says all creation. There's some interesting wording here that they use. All creation, humanity, and even nature were built with a purpose to worship God. Even creation, meaning that's where it said the trees. Even the trees are meant to worship the God of the universe, to participate in their purpose, to worship him. And it says this worship is going to look like singing and ascribing and rejoicing to God. This purposeful worship is going to look like someone who sings and shares and declares God's glory to the nations and the world around them. Now, Tim Keller looked at the psalm and he said something interesting. He said, this is an astonishingly happy psalm. Right? You hear all the sing, ascribe, rejoice, sing, roar, like all these words. It's an astonishingly happy psalm, which is definitely different than some of the other psalms we read, isn't it? Like Psalm 22:1, my God, why have you forsaken me? Little different feel. Why are you so far from saving me from the words of my groaning? There's no way you can put a PR spin on that and go, that's a happy psalm. Like there's no way to do it. But Psalm 96 seems really happy, uber happy, if you will, almost too happy. Like there's this language of joy that comes out of this psalm. So this psalm almost leaves a tension or a disconnect in your heart or mind over the happiness that's communicated and this joy and sing and let the creation be glad. There seems to be a tension between that happiness that's communicated and the broken world that you and I live in. You're like, one of these things doesn't look like the other. Like this is a little bit off. So it leaves a little bit of a tension in our heart. How do we get to what is described? This astonishingly happy psalm, how do we get there knowing that we live in a world that's broken, where things break, where people sin, where relationships get messed up and people die? How do we get there? So what we're going to do is spend the rest of the time breaking apart Psalm 96 and trying to understand, how do they get to this rejoice and sing and ascribe in this happy psalm? How do we get there? So we'll go back and we'll break the psalm into the more manageable pieces so hopefully we can understand what's going on. So let's look again at Psalm 96. We're going to look at 1 through 6. There's going to be kind of a succinct idea given right here, and we'll try and understand what's going on. See the purpose, see worship, and see just this pretty happy attitude through this. So it says, oh, sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord all the earth. Sing to the Lord, bless his name. Tell of his salvation from day to day. Declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous works among all the peoples. For great is the Lord and greatly to be praised. He is to be feared above all gods. For all the gods of the peoples are worthless idols, but the Lord made the heavens. Splendor and majesty are before him. Strength and beauty are in his sanctuary. So this is about purpose. We are to be worshipers. And then he's going to lay out a series of invitations. That's what we're going to see here. There's going to be calls or invitations. Okay, if you want to fulfill your purpose and worship well, here, I'm going to invite you to do these things that are going to show you what it looks like to worship God and fulfill your purpose. And there's some specific things in the beginning, invitation or call. He calls believers to sing and to declare. Three times, sing. Sing to the Lord. Sing to the Lord. Sing to the Lord. It says it three times to make sure that you can't discount. There's a lot of times we hear sing and maybe we don't like to sing. We're going, no, that's not what they really said. Well, he says it twice more in case you're trying to negate what's going on here. So I've met a lot of people throughout my time in church, whether it's here or the church that I was a part of in Iowa, who would say this, I don't need to sing to worship God. Right? Have you heard that one? I don't need to sing to worship him. So I've heard that, and I think that I can agree with part of a sentiment through that. Like, I can understand there's more that you can do to worship God, but I don't know that I can agree with that statement as a whole. There is definitely more to worship than singing vocally to God. But the question from this psalm is there less? Right? Can you worship God without your mouth and without singing? Can you worship him without it? And the answer from the psalm would actually be emphatically no. No, you can't. That's why it says three times, sing to the Lord. Sing to the Lord. sing to the Lord over and over and over. Believers are to sing. And not just believers. This text goes on even further and goes, actually, the whole earth is to sing out to God. Now back to the statement again. I don't need to sing to worship. Now some people say this, right? Some people negate the sing to the Lord in worship really for a different reason, because they feel like they aren't very good vocally, right? I just can't sing. And I get you there. Like I'm not, they won't let me sing when we play music. They have a oh no button back there to turn me off if I try and sing. So I get that. There's people who say, oh, I just don't know if I'm vocally talented, so I don't know if I can sing well. And I would say for many of you who think that, your assessment's correct. You can't sing, right? There's a lot of people that I've ran into in my past who are really kind of horrible vocally. And I mean like American Idol first episode horrible. Right, where you want to put the pillow over your head and you're like, how do they not know how bad that is, sort of thing. There's a lot of people who would fall into that category, but somehow their worship and their voice is just as pleasing to God as the best singer in the room. And there's a specific reason for that. Like, all jokes aside about people who don't sing so well, your worship in vocally through singing is not about how good your voice is. It's about honoring God. That's why it calls everyone to do it. Sing to the Lord, sing to the Lord, sing to the Lord. But I don't know if I like singing. It's not about you. It's about honoring God. So that's why you're called to do it. It's why you don't have to be the best singer in the world. God deserves your honor. So we sing to him, not to make this beautiful music, or else some of us wouldn't be able to sing to the Lord so that he can be honored. The reality of this, that singing is about God's honor and not our voice, has a couple implications. And these may sound not so serious, but for some people they are. The first implication is, if you don't think you're a good singer, if that stops you from singing to the Lord, if it's not about your voice and it's about God's honor, then you don't need to worry about it. Like, you can just let it out, just maybe do it softly, right? You can sing to the Lord because you're called to honor him, whether you feel like you're a great singer or not. And here's the other one that's a little bit more dangerous, and I've ran into this in every church that I've ever been a part of. If there's some people who don't want to sing, there's other people who really do want to sing. Right? They mistakenly think that worship is their voice, right? That the best gift that they have to God is to bring their song before him. So what do? They act like every chance to worship with the body is a music audition, and they let it fly, right? Because they think the quality of my voice is giving God more honor, and that's a mistake also. Because remember, it's not about your voice, it's about honoring God. So if you don't want to sing, sing because it's honoring. If you're scream singing to try and get some kind of idol going, just worship God. Like, you and I, all of us, it doesn't matter. That's why I can sing too, is because it's about honoring God, even if they won't turn my mic on, which I'll get it someday. They won't see it coming. All of creation is called to honor him, but they're called to honor him with the right motivation. I hope that makes sense. It's not about us. It's not about how good things sound. It's about saying, God, I want to honor you because you are good and you are worthy of my praise. Then this text flows from singing to the Lord to declaring his glory. Here's the question. Where does it say we are to declare God's glory to? Where does it say? Are we to do it in church? With friends who think just like we do? To ourselves and our prayer closet thing? No, it says, declare the Lord to all the nations. Directly, all the nations. If you're wondering who all the nations, that means everyone. Especially everyone not like you is the connotation here. And then it repeats itself again with different words in case you're a little confused on what it means. Now, when the Bible repeats itself with different language, it's going, listen, I said it twice so that you'll remember what's going on here. It says it again. What does all the nations actually mean? To all the peoples. Declare the Lord to all the nations. Who is that? It's to all the peoples. Now, if you were with us in our series on Acts, we beat this one for all of it, for all that it was worth, right? We are to be ambassadors to God, to witness to the world around us, to declare his glory to them so that they would know him and understand that he was good and maybe receive grace and mercy like some of us have. We are to declare so that people who are far off can be brought into the family of God. That's why we are to declare it to all people. There's some of us that really need to have our mind changed because we are oh so eager to share God with people who already believe in him, but not so eager to share him with people who are not much like us. Our purpose is to sing and declare God's glory to all people. So then let's dig even further into this whole purpose thing. Why would this be creation's purpose, right? Sing to the Lord, declare his name. This is the purpose for all believers. Why would this be their purpose? Why can we say emphatically this is everyone's purpose? There would be many who would hear that statement and go, well, wait a minute, I'm going to scream foul on you. How can you claim to know everyone's purpose? Isn't it conceited? Isn't it pompous? Isn't it elitist for you to say that you can tell everyone what their purpose is? Well, David doesn't think so, and then he answers the reason why it's everyone's purpose in the text himself. He kind of goes through it. Why should we sing and declare God to all the nations? Verse 4, for great is the Lord and greatly to be praised. He is to be feared above all other gods. Basic baseline answer. Why are we to sing and declare? Because he's worth it. He is worthy of it. He is to be feared. He is greatly to be praised. Like, we're not good with big language. Greatly to be praised. We are to sing and declare because he is worthy of it more than anything else. And then look at the second reason, which is a whole lot more to do with mission and how we are wired. And this one may hit you a little bit more. Verse 5, for all the gods of the peoples are worthless idols, but the Lord made the heavens. David is saying it again. All people are worshipers. Every single one of us, you and I, doesn't matter who you are, where you came from, if you have a background in church, if you don't even believe in God, you are a worshiper. Now, the problem is we worship wrongly quite often. That's what David is doing here when he says, for the gods, and that's lowercase g, of the peoples are worthless idols. He's saying we're all worshipers, but the problem is we worship wrong things. We put our worship into things that are not God, and David calls these lowercase gods or our idols when we start worshiping other things than the God of the universe. There's a novelist, his name is David Foster Wallace, and he says this, and I think that we could hear the reality in this statement. We are all dying to give ourselves to something. We are all dying to give ourselves to something. Maybe an older one, Bob Dylan wrote a song called You Gotta Serve Somebody. John Calvin had a famous quote, said our hearts are like idol factories. All three of these are showing that we are worshipers. We constantly take things, even good things, and we make them ultimate, and we try and make them God things in our life. We take things and we begin to give ourselves to them. We begin to live for them. And when we do this, when we take other things besides the God of the universe and we start living for them, then they become our God, they become our religion, and they become our idols. We don't call it that. We call them hobbies. Right? We just enjoy it. Like, well, the Bible would call it actually your idol if you're putting way too much into it. The problem with this is humanity, when they worship things outside of God, are worshiping things without glory. This glory word is going to be really important for the rest of where we're going today. If you look at the text in verse 3, 6, and 8, it uses the same word for glory. It's a Hebrew word, and it comes from kabod, which actually means weight. Weight. It's an idea of something weighty, of something heavy. So when the Bible tells us to declare his glory, we're actually to declare his weight or his weightiness to the world around us. So what in the world does it mean to tell God's weight to the world around you, right? What are they trying to say here? It's the idea, and it's referring to the fact that God has no beginning and no end. The idea that God is sustained by nothing, but everything else is sustained by him. That's this weightiness idea. So if you understand the implications of that, that means for you and I, the molecules and the particles that make up our body were created by God and are only here because God doesn't snap his fingers and tell them to go away. Right? Everything else does not have weight and it does not have glory because it does not sustain itself. It's passing away. It is fading away. There's nothing outside of God. Everything depends on him, is this idea of weightiness and of glory. So anything outside of God is weightless. It has no glory. It's ephemeral. It's passing. It's temporary. It's short-lived. It's transient. It's like smoke, because at some point it's just going to fade away and it's not going to be here anymore. So think about it, our personal idols that you and I may struggle with. Think about the things that we love to make idols, our beauty, our intelligence, our talents, our strength, our health, our relationships. Glorious, weightless, glorious. They don't have that. Our businesses, our money, our toys, our hobbies, our 401k, no glory. No glory in any of those things. All of it, every single bit of it is weightless or gloryless. It's like smoke because at some point it'll just fade away and it won't be here anymore. All of those things someday, and the scary part for some of us is that day's much sooner than we think it is. All of those things will slip through our fingers and they will not be here anymore because they aren't eternal. The Bible is telling you, don't put your worship into worthless gods, into things that aren't eternal, because it's going to be a bad investment. They're just going to slip through your fingers. Think about it this way. If you worship things other than God, when we live for Him, when we breathe for Him, when they are what we throw our identity in, other than the God of the universe, we're headed for a heartbreak, right? There's a wreck ahead of us because at some point, that thing's not going to be yours anymore, and that moment's going to go really, really badly for you. So when you get up in the morning for something else, you have to understand you're in trouble. You're not safe because at some point that's going to escape. You're going to be crushed, consumed, and broken because what you've thrown your identity in, what's consumed your life, what consumes you, is not going to be there anymore. Nothing else but God has glory. And that's why it's saying, okay, make sure you're worshiping the God of the universe, the God of glory, the one who has glory due to Him. Because He's the only one that's eternal and will actually be there and is a worthy investment of your heart and your soul. So if that's true, the Bible over and over commands us to give God glory, doesn't it? And for us, like we have that rebellious thing in our hearts sometimes, like, man, that's pretty demanding of you. To understand when it's saying give God glory, it's saying make Him the most important thing in your life. Order Him first. Not meaning you hate everything else. It's just order Him first. When it's saying that, it's saying do that, yes, because God deserves it, because He has glory. But on the other hand, it's saying that to protect you. It's saying because it is your design and purpose to worship, and if you put your worship into wrong things, it's going to let you down and it's going to hurt you. So glorify God, and that's a life well invested in a God who is glorious, who is weighty, and who will actually still be here, who is a strong foundation and will not escape you, will not slip away, and will not fade away. The Bible uses language that everything else is just eroding. Right? Our bodies, like, think about it. We joke about all this CrossFit love that I love. There's a point where my knees aren't going to be able to do it. Gone. Done. Right? Like, that's something I love right now. Think about it. You love your cars. At some point, they're going to be wrecked or you're going to die and they're not going to be yours anymore. How weighty is that? And that's what the Bible is saying. He's saying you're putting everything into something you can't keep. There's no glory and there's no weight there. So be careful what you invest in. So we'll recap a little bit. The passage says that our purpose is to worship God by singing and declaring that He is glorious to the nations. Everyone is to do that because He deserves it and because we're all worshipers and we don't want to throw our worship into the wrong thing. So we continue this rhythm of singing and declaring and singing and declaring you and I and the world around us all the glory of God instead of false gods that try and grab our attention and grab our hearts. Now, the rest of the psalm is going to elaborate a little bit more about the purpose through our lives to worship. So we've said that you worship through singing and declaring. There's going to be a little bit more that shows if you're actually worshiping God with your life. That comes in verses 7 through 9. Ascribe to the Lord, O families of the peoples. Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due to His name. That was the glory again. Bring an offering and come into His courts. Worship the Lord in splendor of holiness. Tremble before His name, tremble before Him all the earth. So we're called to give God glory, to speak of His glory, and to share His glory. But now it adds this other thing, the next invitation to ascribe God glory. Ascribe Him glory. Ascribe glory. Ascribe glory. The glory that's due to His name. What it's telling us here is it's not good enough to just sing about God. Right? You need to sing about Him, but it's not good enough to just sing about Him. And you need to tell people, you need to declare who He is to the world, but it's not enough to just do that. So it's not okay, it's not enough to just sing a hymn or put that weird Christian status on Facebook and think that you've covered worship. That's not the point. There's more that you're supposed to do here. To give God credit, to ascribe Him the glory that is due to Him means that you don't just sing about His glory or tell people about His glory, you live like He is glorious. That is different. Did you hear that? That's important. We went fast. You don't just sing about His glory or tell about His glory. You live like He's glorious. You live like you actually believe it. That's something much, much different. We are to glorify God with our lives. We've all met people who talk a lot, right? That guy who just talks, like talk it. All you do is talk, right? And they're always talking about their big ideas and their big lofty ideals and the things that are important and the change that they want. And they're always giving these great ideas of grandeur before you. But then you look a little bit closer And the things they're singing about, the things they're talking about, their life reflects none of it. What's the word we use for that? Hypocrite? Hypocrite? David's saying here, let's back up. You and I are all hypocrites every once in a while. Let's make sure we're not thinking we're too awesome. But David is saying, be really careful that you're not a hypocrite in this area. Make sure that you're not just singing and talking about God. Make sure that you're living as if he is glorious. We are designed to live in light of who God is. Remember the statement? Because of God's greatness, what does that mean for our purpose? That's what it is here. Live as if he is glorious. Give him credit for his glory and strength. Worship him with your life. Notice a couple ways in verse 8 it tells you to glorify him with your life. Now, I'm going to put a caveat here. I did not write this. So if you're mad, talk to God or David. But what it's going to do is it's going to give you two key ways for a believer to show that they are living as if God is glorious. Through our offering. Like verse 8, just, you know, you don't, I'm passing the bucket after this, okay? So verse 8, through our offering, we glorify God with our money. And anybody who says that that's not true is just dead wrong or a liar or both. One of the clearest ways to see if we're glorifying God, we used to say is our checkbook, but I don't know that we have those anymore, is our bank statement. It's to see if he's actually glorious in our life. It's important to know that we are called to steward our money well towards God's mission. We're to tithe. And remember, this doesn't say tithe only. This is offering. Tithe is giving a portion of what you have to the church for his mission to go forward. This is offering. That's over and above. Because God is glorious and gracious, he makes a gracious people. Do you want to know if you're living as if he is glorious? Well, do you give your money towards his glory being shared with the world around you? Now, let's make sure we're not going, let's make sure we're not going heretic on here. This is not give your money so that it will be sowed back to you tenfold. You know I don't play that. That's not what it's saying here. It's not saying give your money so that you'll have a better life. It's saying give your money because you believe it's a good way for God to be glorified, and you're hoping that maybe, just maybe, through that other people hear his name and understand that he's merciful. It's not about you getting anything. The Bible says everything that you have is God's anyway. It's just you bringing it back on. Just maybe somebody will hear about you through this. It's not a Ponzi scheme of Christianity to get more money. Are you glorifying God? It says you can look at your offering and your money to see if you are. Then the next one, coming into his courts. Now, this one's Labor Day, so we're going to be nice about everyone who's gone today. But literally, coming into his courts, coming to church, right? If you want to look at a modern-day translation of what coming into his courts, it's coming into the presence of God, in the family of God, or around the gathering that we would call the public worship gathering. Do you want to know if you're glorifying God in your life? Have you carved out time to be intentional to come and be a part with his family? This is one that's hard for us being younger. Because a lot of times what we do is we look at whether we're glorifying God, and we identify one sin and we go, as long as I'm not doing that, I'm not glorifying God, and we're okay to not be at church for months. That's not the way it is. It's saying you need to make sure there's tithe and offering, and also that you're coming into his courts to not neglect being with his people, to see if you've carved out time to be with the family of God. This text is just saying two ways. Do you want to know if you're glorifying him? Here's a litmus test. Just a really quick litmus test. And yes, there's a whole lot more, but we're called to live as if he is really as great as we sing, right? These songs that we sing, our life should reflect those. Then it moves on, Psalms 96, 10 through 13. It's gonna kind of switch gears a little bit. Say among the nations the Lord reigns. Yes, the world is established. It shall never be moved. He will judge the peoples with equity. Let the heavens be glad and let the earth rejoice. Let the sea roar and all that fills it. Let the field exult and everything in it. Then shall all the trees of the forest sing for joy before the Lord, for he comes to judge the earth. He will judge the world in righteousness and the people with faithfulness. Our purpose is to worship God by singing and declaring and living like he is glorious. That's where we've gone so far. Now, do you see the last call? Remember, there's calls, there's invitations. Sing, declare, and ascribe. And here's the last one. The last call is the call for believers to rejoice. You see what it wants you to rejoice in, though? This is the potentially hard or awkward one for some of us. Rejoice in judgment. Rejoice in the fact that God will come back and judge his creation with equity. Listen to the words, let the heavens be glad, let the earth rejoice, let the sea roar, let the field exult, let the trees sing for joy. Why? Because God will come and judge the earth. Now, this may raise a valid question. Why in the world are we so happy about judgment? Like, when we watch movies, Judgment Day is a thing you don't want to see. Why are we so happy about this idea of judgment in Psalm 96? Why are people giddy about it? Right? Isn't that the time where all sin will be accounted for and there's going to be absolutely no loose ends left? Yes. Yes, that's exactly what it means by judgment. So why is this good news? Why is the idea of judgment good? Why will the earth sing because of it? Because on that day, the Bible runs this storyline, and the end of the storyline will start coming true. On the day that all things are judged, the Bible says things like this: death will die and sin will be no more. That's what happens when judgment comes. Creation will be set right. Relationship with God will be restored. Remember the psalm about fighting for your affection? And in these days, I feel far off and it's hard for me to be rooted in God. All that's done when judgment comes. Why? Because sin will be no more. Things will be as they are intended. Our relationship will be fixed. Things will be fixed. Romans says that even creation was subject to futility because of our sin. It's saying creation got hosed because we sinned. Right? Things break down. Things are happening in a way that they're not supposed to. It literally says the world around us is cursed, meaning creation, like the landscape, it's cursed because of sin. So when sin is dealt with, the earth will be made new, and even it will escape the curse that our sin has brought upon it. This is why it says things that we can't hardly understand, that the trees will sing for joy, because things will be set in the way that they are actually supposed to. See, David is pointing to this reality of the hope that's found in Christ. That's why he's happy. That's why this is an astonishingly happy psalm. He's pointing to the hope that's found in Christ. When we opened, we saw that tension, right? Okay, there's this psalm that's speaking of something that I don't know that I feel, and it's disconnected from the world that you live in. Yeah, it definitely is. But the beauty of the gospel is it's speaking of what's still to come. Remember when Garrett preached on the peace of God several weeks ago? What was the end cap of that? That the trials that you run through, the suffering that you run through, will end up producing hope. Hope in what? This. Hope in judgment, that things will be set right, that God will fix everything that has been broken. See, the message of the gospel isn't just a couple people won't go to hell. It's God has sent Jesus to deal with our sin, and that's the thing that has broken everything. Your family members that have passed away, your friends that have passed away, your friends that have gone off the rails, the times that you've gone off the rails, anxiety, depression, death, brokenness, divorce, any of it, sin. It's the cause of all of it. They're triumphantly worshiping because this is the point where all of that goes away. Things don't break anymore. Tears are wiped away, and God goes, I've had a plan for that this whole time. Now, as we close down this psalm, what I want to do is really this. If we are all worshipers, you and I, right? And if you would say you don't believe that's true, I would love to just talk to you. And I would love to be able to show you ways in my life that I've proved over and over and over I worship things and sometimes the wrong things. So if you don't believe that, I'd love to talk to you. But you and I are worshipers who are just oh so eager to give ourselves away. Oh so eager to throw everything that we are into something. And unfortunately, it's honestly the wrong thing many times. So the question of this psalm is this: what are you giving yourself to right now? Right? You saw it coming. What are you giving yourself to? What are you living for? What do you get up for? What is all your hope, your peace, your joy? What has all of it been sowed into you? Will you give yourself to worshiping the God of glory, the one who's actually not a mirage in the long run? The one that's not breaking down? Or will you give yourself to other things, what the Bible calls lesser gods or worthless gods that will not fulfill you? Remember, when we run for other things, there's a promise at the end that we're just believing, if I get that, then I'll just be happy, or I'll be content, or I'll be peace, or things will just be okay. And what the message of the Bible is when we run to other things besides God, we need to understand all those promises that we get from other things aren't going to come true. Will you invest and throw yourself into the God of glory? Or will you throw yourself into weightless things that are ultimately going to hurt you? Man, you guys can come back up. My hope for us is this. I want to be a church that's marked by believers who worship with everything in them. Not just with a part of them. I want to be known as believers, not in an elitist way, but I want us to have a culture of people who worship God well. So I want to know that we don't just sing songs to God, but we definitely do sing songs. And we don't just declare who he is to other people, but we definitely do declare who he is to other people. I want us to be ones who sing and declare, but also live like the things that we declare is true. It's a threefold system to understand if you're worshiping God. My hope is that we would be doing all of those. That we would ascribe to him the glory that's due to his name. That we would sing that he is glorious. That we would share that he was glorious. And we would walk out of here and actually still live like we believe it's true. That's my hope for us. And as we sing and we worship, we're going to play a couple songs. My ask of you is to just ask God, am I doing these? Am I doing these? Or am I doing one of them a whole ton to hide the fact that I'm not doing the others? Do I sing oh so loud to cover the fact that I'll never actually tell somebody who's far off from Jesus who he is? Do I actually tell other people about who Jesus is so much to leave my sins covered up so hopefully I don't have to deal with the things that I'm actually doing? If we're doing one more than the other, that's a problem. My hope is that God would show us how to sing, declare, and live like he really is great. Would you stand and would you pray with me? God, we need you. There could not be a truer quote that we are just so eager to throw ourselves into the wrong things. So eager to give ourselves away. So eager to throw our identity into things that'll crush us. God, I pray that we would just slow down and see that you really are glorious, that you are worthy to be praised, that you are great, that glory is only found in you, God, that you would create in our hearts just the ability to see how great you are, that we would want to run after you in song and truth, and we'd want to live in light of that, God. I pray that you would do that. God, draw us to you. Let us feel the reality of your grace more. God, if it's our own God complex that's letting us not see how glorious you are, would you just break that down. Let us see you instead of us. Let us see you instead of our hobbies and our pursuits, God. May we focus on you. May we love you well, God. May you continue to work in us. May we share who you are with the city, but even more so, may we live like you really are this good in front of our city. I pray for that. Do work in us, God. Don't leave us alone. We need you so much, God. I pray that you would be honored. I pray that you would be glorified. I pray that you would be made much of today, God. Amen.